It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Sentencing reform for nonviolent drug crimes in Iowa is the topic of most of our hour on this legislative Monday. In just a few minutes, Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent Joyce Russell will be joining me along with a couple of lawmakers to see what proposals are being debated in Des Moines. We'd like you to join our conversation as well. If this has any way touched your life, sentencing reform, mandatory sentences, join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Joining me, first of all, is Mandy Martinson. She is a native of Mason City, and she received a 15-year federal sentence related to a methamphetamine charge. Mandy, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
I understand you were released just this past December.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I received an executive clemency from President Obama.
Mm-hmm. How long had you served of the 15-year sentence?
I had served 12 years and 3 months.
Tell us briefly, if you could, about your crime.
I was involved with a methamphetamine conspiracy. I met my boyfriend in December, and my house was raided that January. And then I went to trial later and was found guilty of my charges for conspiracy to distribute methamphetamines and possession of a firearm. As a first-time nonviolent offender, I was sentenced to my mandatory minimum of 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Were you also a user, an addict?
Yeah, I had been using meth for approximately 5 months.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you were sentenced on that day of sentencing. What did the judge say? I mean, the judge's hands were tied to a certain extent because he had a mandatory minimum, right?
Yes, he went on record to say that his hands were tied due to mandatory minimum sentencing laws, and that had his hands not been tied, he would have sentenced me to significantly less time being a first-time offender.
Mm-hmm. When you heard those words spoken by the judge about the mandatory minimum of 15 years in your case, what went through your mind?
I just thought, what a shame that he worked so hard to get to his position and he couldn't even use it.
What do you mean, use it?
I mean that his hands were tied by a law that had he not been bound by it, he would have sentenced me to significantly less. And his experience as a judge, I feel that what he thought I should have been sentenced to is important.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying let the judges do their job is what you're saying?
Yes, I'm saying that they worked very hard to get to that position, and I feel that they should be able to take all things into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Mandatory minimum sentences were put in place to be tough on crime. What do you say to those who say this move of changing mandatory minimums would be soft on crime?
I don't believe in being soft on crime at all. I broke the law. I was using drugs. I was involved in a conspiracy, and I do deserve punishment for that. However, I think that it should be taken into consideration that it was only for a short time. I had no criminal history at all. I was a college graduate, licensed dental hygienist, and I feel like those things should be taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your time in prison. What did you spend your time doing mostly?
I spent my time doing a lot of self-help study, like independent study, to figure out what was wrong inside of me, what was broken at the core of my being that made me use drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And because I figured that was my best defense to come out and not use drugs again.
Were there resources in prison? And I understand this was a prison in Illinois that aided you in reaching that goal of being clean of drugs and then getting to the root problem of why you became an addict in the first place?
Right. I was clean of drugs before I went into prison, so I did that work there. But also, yes, when I was in prison, I started in Pekin, Illinois, and then I moved to Waseca, Minnesota, and they did offer a 500-hour residential drug treatment program, and it was a very good program. It helps you explore reasons why you would use drugs and ways to prevent that from happening again.
I wonder, when you met other offenders serving time for drug offenses, did you meet a lot of other people serving mandatory minimums?
There were a few, yes. There were, you know, everybody's different. So, but there were, the thing I found was the people with the longer records were not serving the mandatory sentences. It was more of the first-time offenders that were serving mandatory sentences, and I think that that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what did you learn about why those convicted of crimes get the sentences they do of varying lengths? What kinds of things factor into that that perhaps we might not know of?
Well, okay, so mandatory sentencing was set up to catch the kingpins, like basically the big fish. And what happens in reality is that the big fish are the ones with all of the names, so they're able to bargain for their sentence to be lowered. And basically, the more information you have to give the government, the more you have to bargain with. So the people that are typically, like me, first-time offenders or have only been using drugs for a very short time don't have a lot of information to bargain with. Therefore, we don't have anything valuable in exchange for a lesser sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the public doesn't realize, is that that's how it happens. And, you know, because it sounds really good, mandatory sentencing, that's great. Let's make sure that there's a level they're going to get sentenced to for sure. But in reality, the thing is, the more information you have to bargain with, the less your sentence is going to be typically.
Mm-hmm. So you would be in favor of Iowa changing its mandatory minimums and also in helping reduce crime, being tough on crime.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit, Mandy, before we say goodbye, about putting your life back together after serving 12 years of a 15-year federal sentence. How was it getting together with your family, finding work, and so on?
For me, finding work was really easy. I work for a law firm, and I also work at a local grocery store. People were willing and happy to help. I think that people like to give second chances when you're willing to put in the work to earn that second chance.
Mm-hmm. Even with a felony on your record, that didn't give any potential employers pause.
It did, and I had some good word of mouth from people that I knew prior to my incarceration that put in good words and vouched for me. So that helped me a lot, having been an active, contributing, positive member of the society before I went into prison. Even though I was gone so long, it still helped me once I was out.
Mm-hmm.
There were people willing to give me a hand.
You've been out of prison less than half a year. How has society How has society changed on first glance when you got out?
The first thing I noticed, obviously, was the phones. Everything is recorded, and everything is so social networked. Just crazy how much everything is on the internet.
A bit overwhelming, isn't it?
One of the first things I did was I went to my 9-year-old niece's performance at the elementary school. And when I was in school, you couldn't even take pictures of another parent's child without their permission. And now it was every parent videotaping the entire performance and putting it online. And that was striking to me.
Mm. Mandy, are you confident that you've kicked your drug habit?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yes.
I can hear the confidence in your voice, Mandy.
Yes. That part of me that was so broken that led me to use drugs to feel better is far behind me now. Like I said, I did a lot of work in prison. I explored, you know, my self-worth, my self-confidence, and I did a lot of work to make sure that I would come out confident and able to be a good, productive member of society and never to walk down that road again.
Mandy Martinson, a native of Mason City, thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you.
Serving 12 years for a 15-year federal sentence, President Obama ordered Mandy to be released this past December. We wish you all the best, Mandy. Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's Legislative Monday. Joyce Russell with me, Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent at the State House Law Library. Hi, Joyce.
Hello, Ben.
So with that backdrop there, one personal story, tell us what, broadly speaking, what's afoot at the State House in terms of sentencing reform?
Well, the bill replaces mandatory or gives a judge a chance to not use a mandatory sentence if there are good reasons not to. And it also takes some current drug offenses and a number of people who were sentenced under mandatory sentences. Those are removed. And so a number of people serving low-level drug offenses are going to be eligible for parole if this bill becomes law. And it also takes a step, the bill also takes a step in the direction of equalizing penalties for crack and powder cocaine. Currently, the penalties are much higher for crack cocaine, and that disproportionately affects African Americans.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with the lawmakers that you have with you at the State House Law Library. Representative Zach Nunn is with us, a Republican of Bondurant, and Representative Mary Wolf, a Democrat of Clinton. Representative Wolf and Nunn, welcome to our program.
Morning, Ben. Thanks.
Good morning.
Let's have you, Representative Nunn, just to tell you, why are you for this sentencing reform? What makes sense to you here?
Thanks, Ben. Yeah, this was a good bipartisan effort that came out of Judiciary Committee, working with both Rick Olson, Representative Wolf, as well as Representative Baltimore, another Republican. We identify there's a couple of key things here. First aspect is just to take a look at Iowa's prisons. Right now, we're 114% capacity. We have too many offenders in prison. One out of every five prisoners in Iowa prisons is going to be in there on a drug offense. A number of these individuals are coming in and end up staying in prison for their mandatory minimum, going back out into society and reoffending at a greater rate than if we would have gotten them into rehab. Mm-hmm. So there's certain the personal element that's very important to us. There's also the fiscal argument here. I mean, we're asking taxpayers to foot the bill for roughly $96 a day to keep someone in prison, and we could get them out on parole and probation for $5 a day over the course of a long-term sentence. There's a huge cost savings. If we were able to get even 388 people who are currently eligible under this bill back into society, back into their families, into their community, into paying taxes, we'd save just on the front end for the Department of Corrections $1.45 million. So I think a lot of really good heartfelt but also mindset changes could be both tough on crime but smart on crime.
Mm-hmm. Representative Wolf, I wonder, I'm not sure if you heard all of my conversation I just had with Mandy Martinson now. Is she sort of a poster person for why this reform needs to take place when you heard her story and her voice and how she's getting her life back together?
Sure, and I think that's great that she's made those changes in her life, and I wish her all the best moving forward. Here in Iowa, we had very few drug offenses that carried those type of draconian and completely irrational mandatory minimum sentences. So, but we had some mandatory minimums with some offenses, and over the past 2 years, we did a bill last year that addressed some of them, and I think House File 579 certainly addresses the rest. So I do think now with the passage, assuming the Senate does pass it, with the passage of House File 579, I think we've done a great job of addressing mandatory minimums with drug offenses. I do think, though, we do need to put some more money into parole and probation so that these people, when they are released earlier than they would have been otherwise, that they do have access to the type of treatment programs and supervision that they need in order to avoid recidivism.
Mm-hmm. Let's be clear here, Representative Wolf. This would be for all types of drug offenses. Where is the line? Federal offenses not included?
Right. So the state government doesn't have any control over federal sentencing rules, so we cannot mess around with that. That's going to have to be handled by Congress, and I wouldn't hold your breath on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's your reaction, Representative Nunn, to how we got here? I'm trying to recall this. We had a lot of a wave of mandatory minimums. Take us back to the extent that you remember it. how you remember it, when and why there were standards placed for mandatory minimums and to get tough on crime. What was the thinking?
Right. Well, back in the 1990s when they first came out, I probably would have still been in junior high school. But the aspect here is that there was a number of criminals being identified as drug offenses that were getting very disparate sentences from justices in different areas. So you might have a rural judge who convicted someone and held them to a very high threshold, and then you had an urban judge who had someone at a very low threshold. They both end up in the same sentencing program, and they're not getting equal treatment under the law. I think we've come a long ways since then. We've identified that standard sentencing really affords the judge, just like in Mandy's case, to be able to look at each case individually and identify if there's a certain threshold that's been met. I want to be very clear that in this bill, House File 579, that it wouldn't be for all drug offenders. We're talking about nonviolent first-time drug offenders who would fall under here. But the most serious offenses, those who are doing distribution, those who have a high intensity of distribution or are repeat offenders, are not going to fall into this category. At the same time, we're keeping Iowans safe while increasing fairness. It allows the courts to ensure the mandatory minimum sentences are not misapplied to less dangerous and less deserving offenders. And perhaps most importantly, we've had a number of states who have already proven this, those from both red states and blue states, Oklahoma and Maryland being two recent examples, where this type of individualized, standardized sentencing really affords the judge better discretion and is shown to get people back into the community in a productive way. Representative Wolf brings up a key point here. There's also got to be the investment on the follow-on side, the reintroduction into society. But again, that's at a fraction of the price of keeping somebody in prison for a much longer time, where they're more likely to come out as a worse offender than they were going in.
Representative Nunn, I know you haven't been in the legislature that long, but I assume you've been a Republican for a while. Can you pinpoint, it wouldn't have been that many years ago, when it just would not have, it would have been very unusual for Republicans to take this risk of looking soft on crime. Can you put your finger on a time when that tide started to turn?
Yeah, I think that when we've looked at a number of issues, this bill, again, I don't want anyone to walk away from this thinking that we're soft on crime here. This is still going to be a smart on crime, tough on crime approach. In fact, we put a couple of things in there that would really look at if somebody was in violation of their parole, they went out and reoffended in drug. We have snap sentencing, which means they come right back into the system so that it's not a blank check. You don't have to be reconvicted again. I think that as Republicans and as Democrats have looked across the board, what's truly working, it's an evolving process. We certainly don't have 1950-style sentencing anymore here in Iowa or anywhere in the country. We're moving that way smartly. And I think there's better ways now with technology, too, that affords us to watch a person on parole and provide some of the resources that may not have been there even as recently as 10 years ago.
And Representative Wolf, I know from our earlier conversation that while you support this legislation, you might have made an argument that it's pretty limited. Could you talk about your feeling that maybe this isn't, it's not going to apply to that many people, and you have some ideas on how it could have been tougher or could have been affected more people?
Right. I think maybe a more comprehensive bill. I think this is, again, as far as drug offenses are concerned, I think that this is it's smart sentencing reform. It is evidence-based. The standard sentencing provision would, I believe, allow a judge to sentence any drug offender to a non-mandatory, to something other than prison, but only under certain very definite parameters, and I'm sure a judge wouldn't do that for a first offense. It does. The bill that we passed out of the House would have also allowed some discretion, that judges to use some discretion, have some flexibility on a few of what are called forcible felonies, for example, robbery second. Again, there's hundreds of people serving sentences for robbery second that have been identified as very low risk to reoffend, but who are sitting in prison for 7.5 years before they're eligible for parole and then are discharged and have a very short time of parole supervision. So my hope is that once, now that we've done this, and I hope it will be successful, and we will see both a drop in the amount of money we spend on prisons and then also on the recidivism rate, I'm hoping that we can come back next session and maybe take a good look at, you know, sentencing reform with regard to forcible felonies. There's all sorts of evidence showing that if it's done right, it really does. It would make Iowa a safer place to live, and it would save us millions of dollars. So.
And the forcible felony provision that you just mentioned that's in the House bill, I understand, am I correct, that there's a Senate amendment to take that out?
Well, there's a Senate amendment that specifically designates robbery second as being one of the long, long list of offenses that are not eligible to receive a standard sentence, or I think the Senate calls it an alternative sentence. So, to be honest, now under the bill, there's basically no forcible felony for which this sentencing reform bill applies anymore. It is just pretty much strictly drug offenses. But again, it's there. The framework is there, and I hope that we can look at it again next session.
And the drug offenses that the bill does cover, these are relatively small sentences to begin with, right?
Well, a lot of the mandatory minimums for drug offenses, courts already had some discretion to waive them under a lot of circumstances. However, still, they do add up, and they are pretty irrational to put someone in there and say, well, you have to sit 2 years. What's the point of that if you don't give them any treatment? So obviously, this will have a impact on our prison population, and it will have a good fiscal impact. And so I just hope that we can do something a little more comprehensive mm-hmm. in the future.
Representative Wolf, before we take a break, we'll have you in the second half hour as well. But obviously, you say an effect on our prison population. Do you or Representative Nunn have an estimate of what percentage or number decrease we can expect?
Yeah, working with Mary on this, in FY16, there were 312 new prison admissions for Class C drug felony offenders. Of those, roughly 291 offenders could be eligible under this bill not to receive the mandatory minimum, and 178 of those would become eligible for consideration for parole under this bill. Additionally, we're looking at upwards of over 100 each year. So I think we're talking about literally been hundreds of people who potentially could have a new lease on life.
Okay. Representative Zach Nunn is with us, as well as Representative Mary Wolf. Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent Joyce Russell with me. When we come back, we'll continue to talk about sentencing reform, a proposal being discussed in Des Moines. Also, a couple of other guests. We'll talk about the difference in sentencing between crack and powder cocaine, why that should be, and whether that should change. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back midstream in this Monday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, along with Iowa Public Radio Statehouse correspondent Joyce Russell. Legislative Monday. This is what we like to do while the legislature is in session to pick the proposals that are being put forward by our lawmakers and find out what's behind them. And today we're talking about legislative sentencing reform, a proposal for sentencing reform that would lower the state mandatory minimum sentences for some drug offenses. One of the aims of this proposal is to reduce overpopulation in Iowa's prisons. Also, we'll talk about this a little bit later, aiming to lower the disparity of African Americans in Iowa's prison system. We have with us Representative Mary Wolf, a Democrat of Clinton, and Representative Zach Nunn, a Republican of Bondurant. And this is, as you said, Representative Nunn and Wolf, a bipartisan effort here. I wonder what can either of you say about the degree of support this has and the chances that this will reach the governor's desk in one form or another.
Yeah, I was really proud of the House. I was proud of them last year when we passed a sentencing reform bill, and I was disappointed when it went over the Senate and they stripped out some of the provisions of that. And the Senate this time around has already kind of restricted the bill. They filed an amendment that restricts it, and I am concerned that they won't move it at all, which would be really disappointing because there is all sorts of evidence-based research that just absolutely documents the fact that doing what this bill proposes reduces crime, reduces recidivism, and saves money. And so unless and until the Senate is willing to take a look at that research and govern themselves accordingly and do what's best for the state, that bill's sitting over in the Senate. So mm-hmm. I have faith that they do want to do what's best for everyone involved. And so I'm hoping that it still moves forward, ends up on the governor's desk.
Representative Nunn, do you have similar concerns?
Yeah, Ben, one of the things about this bill is that we pass it 97-0 in the House. It is very rare that a bill as comprehensive as this gets that level of bipartisan support. And it's a huge credit to both Representative Wolf and Olson, who helped move smart amendments onto it. At the same time, it's not just here in Iowa. We have groups as diverse as Families Against Mandatory Minimums, liberal think tanks on our street who are advocating for this bill, while at the same time, Grover Norquist with Tax Relief and the American Conservative Union are all very much in support of this. So for these, it's like a solar eclipse in the same 24-hour period. It is very rare that we get this opportunity, and I'd really like to be able to see movement in the Senate. We've been working with our colleagues there to identify, hey, there are probably some revisions that could be made, but we still need to get this down to the governor's desk. And it's good for the individual, it's good for the community, and it's good for the taxpayer.
Let's have Molly Gill join us, Director of Federal Legislative Affairs at Families Against Mandatory Minimums. Molly Gill, are you there?
I am. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for being with us. You're supportive of this proposal. Give us the pitch. Why, in a few words, are you for it?
Well, I call this a sweet spot proposal, that if Iowa wants to responsibly manage its current prison population and not pay hundreds of millions of dollars to build more prisons in the future, you have to take a hard look at where you can make some cuts responsibly without endangering the public. And this bill does that. And it's a very carefully calibrated compromise, I think, at this point. I think certainly we would have liked to go even further and see Iowa just get rid of its mandatory sentencing laws. But this is a good approach, and it's a balanced approach. And I think what it's going to do is it's going to allow judges to save those expensive prison beds for the most serious, the most violent, the most dangerous offenders. It doesn't mean no one's going to go to prison. It's not a get out of jail free card. It just means that judges are going to have the chance to look at each person, each drug offender individually. And if they bump into someone like Mandy Martinson, they can say, you know what, I think really we need a shorter sentence for you, and let's get you on a treatment track as fast as possible and get you back to your family and back to the community paying taxes and working a job. And if you have a real serious offender, the judge can still throw the proverbial book at them if they want to. So I think this is a real balanced approach. It's very similar to what lots of other states have been doing. And those states have been seeing their prison populations shrink, which means saved money for taxpayers. And at the same time, crime rates across the country and in those states that have been doing reform, those crime rates are continuing to go down. So, mm-hmm.
Can you name any states? Give us an example of states, perhaps similar to Iowa, where crime rates have gone down after these reforms?
Yeah, sure. South Carolina is a great example. South Carolina did a quite similar reform to this. They took the mandatory sentences out of their code for the lowest level drug offenders, just like this bill does. And they saw their prison population go down. They ended up closing a prison. They ended up saving $2 billion. And at the same time, crime has continued to go down in South Carolina. Oklahoma and Maryland just last year repealed some of their lowest level mandatory sentences for drug offenders. We're seeing other states even this year considering doing the same, states like Florida, Nebraska. More than 30 states now around the country have sort of taken a second look back at these crime policies and these drug policies that we thought were a good idea in the 1980s and the 1990s and said, you know, actually, we know now, we have 30 years of knowledge now, that says there are better, smarter ways to deal with drug crime, and let's be smart about it.
Mm-hmm. Who are the voices speaking against these changes, and why, since we're now several decades past the 80s and 90s, Molly?
Well, typically it tends to be prosecutors, and as Mandy explained, prosecutors have a lot of power at sentencing. And mandatory minimums are basically like giving prosecutors a sledgehammer. And frankly, they like the sledgehammer, and they like the damage that it can do, and they like how easy you can take a wall down with a sledgehammer. And what's interesting is that this bill has the support, though, of the Iowa county attorneys. The state prosecutors are signed up to support the bill. So is the Attorney General, Tom Miller, and so is the Department of Corrections. So I think even law enforcement, and we are increasingly seeing this, even law enforcement and prosecutors around the country, especially with the drug offenses, are really starting to look again and say, you know, if we can get our public safety benefit for a year instead of 5 years, what we save can be reinvested in solving those cold murder cases, getting better services to victims, doing better drug treatments in the middle of this new opioid situation that we have in so many states. So I think even prosecutors and law enforcement are starting to come around and realize there's a better way to spend this money.
Ms. Gill, Joyce Russell here. The county attorneys in Iowa do support this bill. However, at least one of the major law enforcement groups does not. What are the arguments that they make against it?
Well, I think it's the sort of rather simplistic argument that when we're safer when we put people in prison longer. And, you know, FAM is not against prison. We're not against even long prison sentences. We just want them to be used on the right people. And the problem with mandatory sentences is that you use them on everyone, whether it's a Mandy Martinson or a kingpin who's, you know, bringing in huge quantities of drugs into a community. And clearly one of those is a better investment than another when it comes to putting someone in prison for a year or 5 years or 10 years.
We're talking about legislative sentencing reform. Molly Gill, you've just listened to Families Against Mandatory Minimums. Before our time gets away, I want to make sure we hear from Betty Andrews, who's at the Statehouse Law Library as well, president, of the Iowa-Nebraska NAACP. Betty, welcome back to our program.
Thank you for having me.
One of the points here, not only to lessen the prison overpopulation, but to deal with this disparity that we have in our prisons. The Sentencing Project in 2016 found blacks in Iowa are imprisoned at 11 times the rate of whites in Iowa. And so tell us your view on how the current proposal would deal with that disparity.
Sure, and that 11 times is down from 13 times just a few years before. So it, I would say that Iowa is definitely moving in the right direction, and certainly you asked earlier about how mandatory sentencing had, came about, certainly over the last 30 years, and initially with the mandatory propaganda of the 80s and towards crack users and a number of other areas that affected African Americans. We saw a 500% rise in prison population nationally. And here in Iowa, as you mentioned, we're at 11 times the minorities or African Americans being at 11 times that of Caucasians. So definitely are in support of this type of legislation. We believe that the legislation, the proposed legislation, allows for a step forward and moving forward. We see concern in terms of the crack versus powder. We appreciate that it's moving in the right direction, but we certainly would like to see that be equalized. And just because African Americans and white Americans use drugs at the same rate, but it is not reflected in our sentencing. And then also, I was listening earlier when you were speaking with Mandy, and she was talking about, you know, life after prison. And I would say that life after prison doesn't necessarily look the same for people of color in terms of being able to get a job right after. She said that she had the support of her community. Statistically, the numbers show that African Americans have a tougher time getting reacclimated into the job market after being sentenced. And so, you know, hearing that, I applaud that and I'm happy for her, but we've seen so many times that that is not the case. So not only does this sentencing and these mandatory sentences affect going into prison, but they actually have the potential to devastate the lives coming out of prison and then all those that are working around them.
Betty Andrews, can you tell us the difference between powder and crack cocaine Why should there be a difference in sentencing? Can you give us the rationale that has been put forward by that? I know you're not in favor of treating them differently.
Well, there are a number of arguments out there. I think that where a lot of the back and forth comes out strongly is whether or not the usage or the intake is the same. And I guess our stance is that the crack and powder are the same thing. They're cocaine. We, in working with the Public Safety Advisory Board, have had experts come in and tell us that they are the same thing, except when it comes to sentencing. And the other thing is that people use actually less crack to get high than they do for powder. That crack is a kind of a shorter hit. The powder is a longer hit, but the street value for the same amount is the same, yet the sentencing is quite different. And unfortunately, it's the poor community who obviously would use the lower costing crack. And quite frankly, looking at, you know, the economic structure of our country currently, African Americans often fall into the poor communities. Mm-hmm.
Representative Nunn, I was at the subcommittee on this bill in the Senate. Ms. Andrews wasn't the only one there arguing that they should be treated the same. Crack cocaine and powder cocaine should be treated the same. As we've been saying, this bill moves in the direction of making them equal, but they're far from equal in this bill. What are the arguments against making them equal?
Right. And so I think there's a bit of a legacy here that Benny has brought up well, is that what we talk about between powder and crack cocaine has really identified part of the crack epidemic. A lot of people looked at it and said, you know, crack is now almost what meth is. It's a scary drug. It's out there. It's everywhere. How do we address it? The reality is in Iowa today, we are moving it down to a better parity. We're looking for a 5-to-1 ratio. I think that moves us definitely in the right direction. We would be well ahead of all of our state peers, which is a good move. Additionally, during the last two fiscal years, there were 7 new prison admissions for felony cocaine. So speaking on it on a large basis, we're moving in the right way as far as good public policy. As far as applicability basis, we're talking about very few people in the state of Iowa. I want to just highlight here that in Iowa, we have, of those 7 individuals, 3 of them were for super class B felonies, meaning that these are really truly distributors who are out there doing nefarious things with cocaine. 4 were regular, and if we were able to change this law under House File 579, we would get a lot of those frontline level individuals back into a parole situation while still keeping those serious super offenders in prison.
And all of those cocaine cases, they all involved African Americans.
Yeah, 100%.
And so, Ms. Andrews, what do you say to, you just said you'd like to have these penalties the same, the sentences the same. What's your response when Representative Nunn says, well, this is a step in the right direction?
Well, we also agree that it's a step in the right direction. We'd like to see it equalized across the board. And certainly at this point, 7, we're also looking at the future years to come and how that would affect it as well. And we understand that between this legislation or this proposed legislation and also some legislation from last year, we are moving in that direction. And so as we and that's probably a good reason, I mean, a good part of why we've dropped from 13 times the disparity to 11 times. So we applaud the legislature for moving in the right direction, but we know that we still have a lot further to go.
As Representative Nunn, there's...
Okay, no, go ahead, Joyce.
I was just going to say, Representative Nunn, there's another part of this bill that we haven't talked about that is the result of the tragic shooting deaths of 2 Des Moines area police officers last year. Tell us about that part of the bill.
Right. I think this is a really important part of the bill. And when we talk about being smart on crime, it also means not just the rights of the offender or the community, but those who are running into harm's way. And far too often, this is the peace officer in Iowa. What this would allow, we had an officer from my community who was targeted and killed this summer. His family lives in my area, and the challenge is that if you kill a law enforcement officer, you will spend the rest of your life in prison if convicted. The challenge is that if you shoot an officer and their vest protects and saves their life, you may only be in for a Class B. And after 70% of your sentence, because Iowa is good about time earned, you may see someone who tries with intent to kill an officer out walking on the street after they've served good time in prison. I think that sends the wrong message to people who would do harm to the vanguard of who's trying to keep our community safe. So this is really a testament to our law enforcement officers are the ones who are responding to some of the most dangerous events in Iowa and providing them that enhanced level of protection. And I believe truth in sentencing, that if you're going to try and kill an officer, you will spend 100% of your time in prison, whether you were a good shot or a bad shot, to put it in those blunt terms.
So this is a bill to reduce sentences, and that part of the bill goes in the other direction. Was there bipartisan support for that, Representative Wolf?
Well, the whole idea of enhancing penalties based on the identity of the victim is a little problematic, I think, for some of us, and that one could argue that a young child's life is also as valuable. I also think that there's the idea that this somehow gives law enforcement some protection that they wouldn't otherwise have. I think that's a little overly optimistic, and that I don't think people who are going to kill a police officer make that kind of cost-benefit analysis. Having said that, yes, certainly the fact that we link those two issues together, both the sentencing reform and then the 100% sentencing enhancement for that specific crime, it certainly did help move the bill out of the House unanimously. And again, I would think that that would also be appealing to our senators.
Betty Andrews, perhaps before we go, can you tell us a little bit more about what the NAACP has done to educate people about the disparity? You've said it's improved from 13 times the rate of whites in Iowa to 11 times. How much has education been a part of that?
Well, I know with the NAACP, we have worked with the governor's office, with the governor directly, with the chief justice's office on working with the judges, as well as being on the Hill regularly. And we also hold criminal justice forums like the Iowa Summit on Justice and Disparities. We work with every aspect of the criminal justice system, which we realize that they are actually systems, not necessarily always working in flow. So, and we definitely believe that education is key to that. Just being able to have our voice heard on the Hill has had some major impact. Yeah. We continue to do that.
We don't have much time left, but I wonder, Betty, are there common myths you run across that are also held by lawmakers that you needed to explode with the data?
Well, when you say common myths, I guess part of, I think, more
about
accurately,
why we have so many more blacks in Iowa prisons than our population would indicate.
Right. And and more accurately, I'd probably say that we do bring the information to them on the usage of drugs, the fact that it's pretty equal amongst the races, yet African Americans seem to be sentenced at a higher rate, and a number of other statistics like that. We do make it a point to bring them and share that information, and that's the purpose of our educational forums.
And Ms. Andrews, when sentencing reform has been discussed in the House in the past, I heard one Republican lawmaker say one time, well, I don't know of any blacks in prison who aren't in there for a reason. Is that something that's going to be something to combat?
Or if you hear the thing, if you do the crime, you must do the time. The fact is that African Americans tend to do more time based on any crime, and the statistics show that. So we're in prison, or African Americans, I apologize, are in prison much longer when they are doing identical crime. There's also the factor that many are poor and don't have representation, and so they often plea to crimes that they are afraid to take at a higher level, and so they don't really have the benefit of being represented in court fairly, and that kind of, they're just afraid, and so all of those things play a role in keeping the disproportionality high.
Okay,
Ms. Anderson, I think you bring up a really good point. I just want to say that overwhelmingly, we're also looking at not just a minority majority. We're looking at poor Iowans are constantly put in a difficult position. So this bill's not done yet. It's still got to get through the Senate. It's got to get down to the governor. there's a lot of good that can come from just talking to your senator and articulating why you think this would be advantageous.
Representative Zach Nunn, Representative Mary Wolf, Betty Andrews, and Molly Gill, thank you very much for this conversation. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Ben Kiefer and Joyce Russell saying thanks.